Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
The house in Las Vegas looked like a reward. That was how it felt to her parents, at least, a visible marker that life had improved. They had come from smaller places, from buildings that carried problems you could see immediately. This house was different. Two stories, clean lines, a neighborhood that felt orderly and safe. It was the kind of place where nothing bad was supposed to happen. She was 4 years old when they moved in. Her sister was almost three. To them, it was just a bigger house with more places to play. To their parents, it was a declaration that they had arrived somewhere better. On the first day, friends came over to see it. Among them was a priest her father had known casually for years. According to her mother, the visit didn't unfold the way anyone expected. The priest walked through the house, paused, and then asked her father to step outside with him into the backyard. What he said there wasn't shared with the children until much later. He told her father they shouldn't stay, that something was already inside the house, something he described as evil, not unsettled, not residual, present. Her father laughed. He wasn't religious. He didn't believe in omens or unseen warnings. He brushed it off, assuming the man was projecting superstition onto a stranger's home. The priest left shortly after. The house stayed. For a time, nothing obvious happened, and at least nothing that registered to two small children. Years later, her mother admitted that things began almost immediately. At night, she and her husband would hear the sound of wings flapping in their bedroom. Not a light flutter, but something heavy, rhythmic, close. Each time they turned on the light, the room was empty. They tried to rationalize it, air moving through the fireplace, pressure changes, but the sounds continued even after they stuffed the opening with towels. Electrical equipment misbehaved constantly. Workout machines turned on by themselves, even when unplugged. The television in their bedroom switched on without warning. These incidents were unsettling but still explainable enough that they tried to ignore them. There was one thing they could not ignore. One night, her mother woke to see a glowing outline standing at the foot of the bed. Fear locked her body in place. When she turned to her husband, she realized he was awake too. He was staring at the same spot, seeing the same thing. After several seconds, he jumped out of bed and turned on the light. Nothing was there. They never told the children. Even without knowing those stories, both girls avoided their parents' bedroom. The room felt wrong. The air inside it was colder than the rest of the house, sharp in a way that made breathing feel shallow. The bathroom mirror terrified her. She avoided looking into it, convinced she would see a woman stepping out of the walk-in closet behind her reflection. She never told anyone that either. As she got older and began attending religious school, she developed a habit. Whenever she entered the room, she sang hymns or said prayers out loud. Each time she did, the chill eased slightly. The difference was subtle, but it was there. She didn't question why it worked. She just kept doing it. It didn't take long before the children began having experiences of their own. One afternoon, her sister was alone in her bedroom when every toy instrument in the playroom began playing at once. The playroom was empty. The sounds overlapped chaotically, as though someone had activated them all simultaneously. Her sister called out, asking if she was there. She wasn't. She was downstairs watching television. Her sister ran downstairs immediately. She didn't mention the incident again for years. Another moment stayed with her far longer. She was around 8 years old, sitting close to the television in the playroom, watching a ghost hunting show. During a scene transition, the screen went briefly black, reflecting the room behind her. In that reflection, she saw a tall, black figure standing in the open doorway. She turned instantly, expecting her father home from work. No one was there. She shut off the television and went downstairs without explanation. Those moments blended into a larger pattern. Almost every night, she and her sister heard footsteps in the attic above them and on the stairs leading up to their rooms. Going downstairs filled her with dread. In her mind, she pictured a woman with wild red hair and sharp teeth grabbing her and throwing her down the steps. The image was so vivid, it stopped her more than once. The fear intensified after her first Holy Communion. One night shortly afterward, she woke suddenly and saw the clock glowing on her nightstand. It was exactly midnight. As she focused on it, she noticed the smoke detector near her bedroom door flashing red. It normally stayed a steady green. She sat up to investigate. That was when she saw the woman standing in her doorway. She wore an old-fashioned nightgown, white and pale blue, high-collared and floor-length. Her white hair was piled wildly on her head. She swayed gently, leaving faint trails of light behind her movement. Her face shifted unnaturally, flickering between a skull and a nearly featureless human shape. Trying to make sense of it, she called out softly, "Mommy?" The figure shook its head. "Sissy?" Again it shook its head. She thought then of her grandmother, who had died weeks before she was born. "Grammy?" She never remembered the response clearly, only that the figure grinned. That was enough. She hid under her blankets, pinching herself hard enough to leave marks, desperate to wake herself if this was a dream. When she finally told her mother days later, she was reassured that it must have been her grandmother visiting. Years later, her sister told her that their grandmother had visited her too, but she looked nothing like that. In that house, the strange incidents never felt like a single story. They felt like weather. Some weeks were clear, almost normal, and then without warning, the atmosphere would shift and everyone would move differently without admitting why. The adults stayed quiet. The children learned to keep their own quiet. What was shared was usually shared later, years after the fact, when it was safer to speak about it as memory instead of immediate threat. The incident with the woman in the doorway should have ended as a one-time terror, the kind of thing a child later wonders if she dreamed. But it didn't fade that way. It lodged itself in her mind because it had a specific shape, a specific behavior, and a specific intelligence. It shook its head at her questions. It grinned as if it understood the power of being recognized. For a while after that night, she avoided darkness in a practical, childish way. She insisted on light spilling from hallways. She kept doors open. She stayed near voices and televisions and anything that made a house feel occupied by the living. The attic footsteps continued, the stairs continued, the sense of being pursued in her imagination by that red-haired, sharp-toothed woman intensified whenever she was alone on the staircase. What complicated the fear was that small things occasionally occurred that didn't feel threatening at all. She didn't learn about the cat until years later. Her sister told her the story almost casually, as if she were mentioning a childhood prank. One afternoon, while she slept in her room, her sister passed by and froze at the sight of something at the foot of the bed. A cat. Not a normal cat, but something semi-transparent, white and fluffy, curled as though it belonged there. It glowed faintly, not enough to light the room, but enough to look like it was softly lit from within. Her sister stood there a long time watching it, trying to figure out whether she was actually seeing what she thought she was seeing. Didn't move. It didn't react. It just remained curled up in a posture that looked peaceful. When she finally woke and asked why her sister was staring at her, the cat vanished instantly. Her sister said the strangest part wasn't the disappearance. It was the feeling it gave off. It didn't feel hostile. It felt watchful, protective, in a quiet, animal way. That detail stayed with her, especially later in life when cats began appearing again in her experiences. But at the time, she was a child trapped in a house that seemed to alternate between menace and strange, indifferent observation. By fifth grade, fear had become an everyday companion. It lived in the mundane details, hesitating at the foot of the stairs, avoiding mirrors, listening for footsteps, and trying to decide whether they were real or imagined. She learned to ignore what she could. She learned to be brave in front of her sister. She learned to keep her parents from worrying by not saying too much. Then came the dream. It began in a way that felt so normal she didn't question it. Until later. In the dream, she woke up abruptly and sat bolt upright, the bedroom light already on. She could see her bed clearly, could see the edges of her room, and that clarity is what made it feel real. Then she noticed movement beneath the bed. Long black hands, too long, too thin, with fingers that looked jointed in the wrong places, rose slowly from underneath. There were several pairs. They reached up and began pulling the sheets away, inch by inch, as if stripping the bed with patience. In the dream, she leapt up, sprinted to the banister overlooking the brightly lit entryway below, and screamed for her parents. Her voice echoed down into the open space, urgent and high, the kind of panic that comes from a child realizing she can't handle something alone. Then, in the dream, she walked back to her doorway. Her bed was stripped bare, the hands were gone, and perched on the headboard was the doll. Her mother had bought the dolls a year or two earlier, the kind made to resemble you. They had been fun at first, but she had grown bored with dolls quickly, and the look-alike doll ended up abandoned in a basket of toys in the playroom. It remained there, unclothed, forgotten. A small imitation of her face turned lifeless by disuse. In the dream, it clung to the headboard like an animal. Its arms were crossed, its head tilted at the same angle she often tilted her own. It smiled widely, as if it had been waiting for her to notice it again. That was the moment she woke. The bedroom light was on. Her sheets were off her, tangled as if she had been fighting them in her sleep. Hard hammering, she jumped up, ran to the banister, and screamed for her parents. When she shouted, they were watching television downstairs. She could even hear the same cadence of voices from the show, just like in the dream. They came racing up the stairs. She told them what she'd dreamed, expecting reassurance or at least an explanation that would help her regain control. Instead, her mother reacted with an intensity that frightened her. Something in her mother's expression shifted from concern to certainty, as if this was not the first time she had wondered whether something in the house could attach itself to objects. Her mother decided right then that the dolls had to go. She didn't wait until morning. She didn't discuss it. She threw both dolls away that night. Her sister cried, furious and confused. The dolls had belonged to them, after all. It felt cruel and impulsive. But their mother's reaction wasn't about toys. It was about fear. Around that same time, the house was cleansed for the first time. There was no grand ceremony described to the children, no dramatic speech. Just adults moving through rooms with an intent that felt serious, like closing windows before a storm. Afterward, the atmosphere shifted. Nights grew quieter. The tension eased slightly, enough that she allowed herself to believe it had worked. But the calm didn't last. The first sign of the old pattern returning was footsteps again, above them on the stairs, just outside rooms when everyone was asleep. Then came moments that were harder to ignore because they happened in the open. One night, she sat alone in the living room watching television. The house was dark except for the kitchen light behind her. Without warning, the shadow of something enormous swept across the wall, blocking the kitchen light completely. The shape was too large, too curved, too specific to be a person passing by. It looked like a wing. She didn't turn around. She didn't want to confirm it with sight. She shut off the television and went to her room, forcing herself to walk steadily, as if refusing to appear afraid might prevent whatever it was from feeding on her reaction. Another night, she was in bed staring into the short hallway between her room and her sister's. The bathroom light was on, casting dim illumination. Suddenly, an all-black shape darted out of her sister's bedroom and into the bathroom. She froze, then called out, voice halting. "Sissy, did you just go into the bathroom?" Her sister answered after a pause, voice just as hesitant. "No, why?" She brushed it aside in the moment, because what else could she do? Later, her sister admitted she had seen something too, almost simultaneously. An all-black shape emerging from her closet and darting into the hallway right before her sister called out. two separate sightings overlapping in time as if the same thing had moved between them. By then, the house no longer felt like it was merely acting up. It felt aware. And that awareness was what made her mother finally say, years later, that she sometimes wondered whether the priest had been right on the very first day, whether what had been in that house had already been waiting, and whether moving in had simply given it permission to begin. By the time she reached her teenage years, the house no longer felt like a place where things happened. It felt like a place where things returned. The pattern was familiar by then. A period of quiet would settle in long enough for everyone to exhale to convince themselves that whatever had been stirring had finally burned itself out. And then, slowly, without spectacle, the atmosphere would thicken again. Sounds would reappear. Rooms would grow tense. Animals would react before people did. In ninth grade, her parents separated. At the time, it felt like relief more than loss. Her father carried anger with him wherever he went, and the house had absorbed it for years. Arguments, slammed doors, violence that never quite stayed contained. When he left, the emotional temperature of the home changed almost immediately. The shouting stopped. The air felt clearer. For a while, it seemed as though the house itself had exhaled. They had it blessed again. For a short stretch afterward, things were calm. No footsteps. No shapes darting through hallways. No shadows that moved independently of light. She began sleeping more easily, letting herself believe that whatever had clung to the house might have been feeding on conflict as much as fear. But calm in that house was never permanent. The dogs noticed first. They had seven at the time, each with its own personality, its own tolerance for noise and strangers. One by one, they began refusing to enter her bedroom. They would stop at the doorway, whining or backing away, nails scraping against the floor as if pulled by instinct rather than training. Treats didn't work. Calling didn't work. They would not cross the threshold. Not long after that, the footsteps returned. She would hear them in her mother's bedroom when no one else was home, heavy and deliberate, pacing back and forth. Cabinets opened and slammed shut repeatedly, the sound echoing through an otherwise empty house. When she investigated, everything would be still. Nothing disturbed, nothing broken. There were no climactic moments, no singular event that forced a reckoning. Just enough activity to remind her that whatever had been there before had not left entirely. It had simply changed its behavior. In March of her junior year, they moved. The departure was quiet, no dramatic farewell to the house, no final incident to punctuate the years spent there. They packed their things, locked the doors, and left. The effect was immediate. The noises stopped, the footsteps vanished, the shadows did not follow. For the first time in her life, she slept without waiting for something to interrupt the night. The absence was so complete that it felt unreal at first, as though silence itself might be another trick. But the silence held. What remained was a heaviness that no longer belonged to a place. Lived closer to her now, an internal weight rather than an external presence. She didn't feel threatened. She felt watched in a distant, impersonal way, like something aware that its influence had ended but not fully severed. Years later, she told a close friend about the house. This friend claimed to be psychic, something she would normally have dismissed outright. But there were moments, small and unexplainable, that made her hesitate before laughing it off. When she finished recounting the experiences, her friend didn't hesitate at all. She said a dark spirit had attached itself to the family. The idea sounded melodramatic, even offensive to her sense of logic. She laughed, masking discomfort with sarcasm. When she challenged the claim, her friend grew serious and warned her not to mock something she didn't understand. She said attachments could retaliate. Her mother was pregnant at the time. Less than 2 weeks later, her mother miscarried. Doctors found no medical reason, no explanation. That made sense, and she never told her friend how deeply that timing shook her. Her friend said something else then, quieter but more persistent. She said that she carried a kind of light, something that drew attention, that the women in her mother's family had a long history of sensitivity, of abilities that were never discussed openly but always understood. Looking back, she tried to assemble the story in a way that made sense. She questioned her own memories, her tendency to connect events that might not be related. Childhood imagination was powerful. Stress reshaped perception. Fear could teach the mind to see patterns where none existed. And yet, imagination didn't explain why her sister described the same woman with wild red hair and sharp teeth years apart without ever being told. It didn't explain her mother's immediate recognition of a presence in the room that night. It didn't explain the dogs or the way the house responded to emotional shifts, growing louder during conflict and quieter during peace. If the experiences had been imaginary, they were unusually coordinated. If they were something else, then the implications were harder to accept. Perhaps nothing had been haunting the house at all. Perhaps the house had simply been the container, a place where fear, conflict, belief, and vulnerability intersected long enough for something to take shape. Whether that shape came from the mind, from family history, or from somewhere outside understanding, no longer mattered as much as it once had. What mattered was that it ended, not with a confrontation, not with a victory, but with change. She was older. The environment was different. The dynamics that once fed the activity were gone. Whatever had been present no longer had access to the same conditions. Or perhaps it had simply moved on. That possibility unsettled her more than any explanation involving faith or psychology. It suggested agency, choice, a presence that did not need permission to arrive and did not require banishment to leave. She lives now without incident. No shadows cross her doorways, no footsteps climb her stairs, no figures stand at the edges of her vision, but the experiences shaped her in ways she still recognizes. She pays attention. She notices when a room feels wrong, when silence feels weighted rather than empty. She doesn't rush to label those feelings. She learned long ago that naming something doesn't grant control over it. Whether what followed her childhood was imagination, inheritance, or something darker entirely, she cannot say. The story resists a clean ending. It always has. What she knows is this. The house was never just a house, and leaving it did not erase what happened there. It simply closed the door. And whatever stood on the other side, real or imagined, has not crossed that threshold again.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.